This is Steve Carroll for the EM Basic Podcast. Today we're going to talk about how to give a good ED patient presentation. Giving a good presentation is a vital part of working in the ED, and getting it right will benefit you, the patient, and the person on the receiving end of your presentation. The key is to make it brief, keep it pertinent, think of the life-threatening diagnoses, and finally, have a management plan. Keeping it brief and pertinent is important because, let's face it, all of us in the ED have ADD to some degree, and it probably helps us do our job. In the ED, we are most concerned about the life-threatening causes of a patient's chief complaint, so that always has to be addressed. And finally, the management plan is probably the most important part of the presentation. On most other rotations, if you're a medical student, then you'll be relegated to the reporter role, where you're going to report your findings, but not really expected to come up with a plan. Here in the ED, we want you to be able to formulate a plan for your patients, so it's probably a step up compared to your other rotations. We'll go over how to give a good ED presentation so it hits all of those goals. Brief, pertinent, covering the life threats, and having a management plan. Before we get started, I just wanted to thank a listener named Jake who suggested this topic for the podcast. He sent me an email suggesting this topic, so for all the listeners out there, send me your show suggestions because I take them seriously and I will get them done sooner or later. So with that, let's get started. As always, this podcast doesn't represent the views or opinions of the Department of Defense, the U.S. Army, or the Shawshank EM Residency. So before we start on the actual presentation, let me give two general tips for evaluating ED patients when you're reporting to someone else. If you walk into the room and see that the patient is in a lot of pain, is vomiting a lot, or looks critically ill, then don't go any further and find your supervisor immediately and tell them to come see the patient. They will appreciate your awareness of the situation and the fact that you're keeping the patient safe. Don't look at it as a sign of weakness. Look at it as a sign of awareness of how the patient looks. One more thing to mention is to be aware of the amount of time that you spend in the room evaluating the patient. As a guideline, keep it to 10 minutes, 15 at the max. This may require you to redirect the patient to keep them on track with their current chief complaint, but if you do it in a professional manner, then you'll be okay. I don't say this to be uncaring or not be compassionate to people. It's about keeping all the patients in the ED safe. If you find yourself spending 20 or 30 minutes in the room, then that is slowing down care for that patient and the other patients around them, and your patient may need timely care. If you really find yourself in a bind and are reaching the 15-minute mark without having completed an exam, no matter how hard you try, gracefully bow out, get your supervisor, and explain why you can't seem to keep the patient on track. They may be able to help you out and should appreciate the fact that you knew when to fold them and get some help. So first, make sure you examine all parts of the chart, including vital signs and the triage note, to make sure you can give a complete presentation. If you need to, circle abnormal vital signs so that you remember to address them in your presentation. So here's the rundown of the components of an ED patient presentation. We'll go through the entire list, and then I'll go through each one individually. So here's the list. You're going to start with the chief complaint, then the history of present illness with pertinent positives and negatives, a brief review of systems, a focused past medical and surgical history, a focused pertinent medications and allergies, a very focused social history and family history if required at all. You're going to highlight any vital signs, especially any ones that are abnormal, a focused and pertinent physical exam, a differential diagnosis that includes three life-threatening things followed by what you think it is, and then finally your plan, what you would like to do, and then finally your disposition. Where is the patient going to go? Are they going to be discharged, admitted, or they need further testing before a decision can be made? So let's start with the chief complaint. It should be about a sentence long. For example, I have a 40-year-old male with a chief complaint of chest pain. So one caveat here. If the patient is pregnant, then that's very important to say up front. So in that case, you would say, I have a 20-year-old pregnant female with a chief complaint of vaginal bleeding. One step further is to add G's and P's and estimate gestational age to your pregnant patients. So for that same patient, you could say, I have a 20-year-old female, G1, P0, at 8 weeks by dates with vaginal bleeding. One other thing for your female patients is that if you have a female patient with uncertain pregnancy status with a chief complaint that could be related to pregnancy, you'll want to say something like, I have a 20-year-old female with unknown pregnancy status with a chief complaint of abdominal pain. If the patient has multiple complaints, you can say that, but try to figure out which one is the reason why they came to the ED. For example, say, I have a 50-year-old male with multiple complaints, most concerned about abdominal pain. The next part of the presentation is your history of present illness with pertinent positives and negatives. So you're going to give a brief description of what brought the patient into the ED and the recent history of that complaint. Focus on your OPQRST questions about any pain or discomfort that they may be having. Then give the pertinent positives and negatives. This can be tricky when you're first starting out, but think of it logically. If a patient has abdominal pain, knowing that they have nausea but no vomiting is helpful. On that same patient, saying that they had left toe pain a week ago probably isn't that helpful. Or saying that they don't have left shoulder pain isn't really helpful either. Think ahead of time. What would I want to know about this patient to make a diagnosis? Next, you're going to give a brief review of systems. If you covered all the pertinent review of systems in your HPI, you can say, review of systems otherwise negative. If there were other symptoms that weren't covered in your HPI, mention them here, but you don't want to go through an exhaustive review of systems. This doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it, a review of systems on every patient. It means that you're only reporting the pertinent details of that review here. Next, you'll want to give a focused past medical and past surgical history. Once again, when I say focused, I don't mean not to get a complete past medical history. I mean that when you report it, you remain focused on the patient's chief complaint. For example, if you have a broken foot, but you aren't wheezing or having respiratory distress, then your PMH of asthma probably doesn't need to be mentioned, or it can be just mentioned in passing. In regards to the surgical side, what is much more important to say is that you've never had surgery on that same broken foot. On the same token, let's say that you are coming in for abdominal pain. Knowing that you've had an appendectomy is very important. Knowing that the patient had TM tubes as a child probably isn't worth mentioning. You'll write the TM tubes down on the chart, but you probably won't mention it in your presentation. So take a second to think about what the most important parts of the past medical and past surgical history are and mention them. This will help keep your presentations brief and focused. If the person you're presenting to wants to know more info, they will ask. There's one brief addition for children at this point. For each pediatric patient, I ask the patient's caregiver whether their shots are up to date, whether there were any problems at birth, and whether they are growing and developing normally. First, I ask if their shots are up to date, and then I clarify. For example, if the patient is 4 months old, I ask if their shots are up to date, and then I make sure to ask if they've actually had their 4 month shots. Make sure that you're on the same page as the caretakers with this one. Next, ask if there were any problems at birth, such as being born prematurely or having to stay in the NICU. Finally, ask if they are growing and developing normally. Some parents will know their child's height and weight percentiles off the top of their head, and that's great, but what I'm more concerned about are any developmental delays like speech or growth delays. Next, talk about pertinent medications and allergies. Once again, this is where to use some common sense. If a person complains of chest pain, it's very important to know that they are on aspirin or warfarin, but it probably doesn't matter that they take occasional medications for seasonal allergies unless they're taking boatloads of pseudoephedrine. I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but it's worth stressing again that this doesn't mean that you don't take a complete history of all the patient's medications. It just means that you aren't going to mention it in the presentation. Do the same thing with allergies. Food allergies don't concern me that much in a patient with pneumonia, but if they're allergic to a certain antibiotic that I may consider using, then that's important to know. Make sure to find out what the exact allergy is if you can. Sometimes patients say that they are allergic to penicillin when it's a side effect like vomiting, or if they have a family history of penicillin allergy. This is a tangent, but it's worth saying that medical-legally, you still have a tough time giving that patient penicillin, but that's a whole other can of worms. Just briefly mention what the patient's allergy is if you think that you may want to give them that medication to treat their condition. If the patient has a laceration, mention their tetanus status at this time. Next, you'll want to mention a very brief social and family history if it is at all relevant. For example, let's go back to that patient with the broken foot. You'll still document whether the patient smokes, drinks, or does drugs, but it's not really going to be relevant in your presentation most of the time. Same thing for the family history. Now, if you have a 40-year-old patient with chest pain and concerning story for an MI, then knowing that everyone in their family has MIs at 40 years old is important. You may skip this section altogether, or just say that it's non-contributory for most complaints. So let's stop there and hit the major points thus far. First, make sure to read and address all parts of the chart, including the chief complaint, the triage note, and the vitals. Start off your presentation with the chief complaint. Adjust it as necessary for pregnant patients and for those with multiple complaints. Give your HPI with pertinent positives and negatives. Give a brief review of systems. Give a focused past medical and past surgical history. Give a focused pertinent medications and allergies. Do a very focused social history and family history if you need to do one at all. So don't worry about memorizing all of these. I'll put this entire thing in the show notes, and it will be very easy to carry around with you to remember to hit all of these points when you're actually on shift. Next, let's talk about the vitals, the physical exam, the differential, and the all-important management plan and disposition. So the next step is to address the vital signs. If there's anything abnormal, mention it here. Most patients in the ED are hypertensive, related to pain or anxiety, so don't dive too much into that analysis, but be sure to mention all abnormal vital signs, especially tachycardia. Tachycardia is the one vital sign that people tend to forget about, but it's very important to address. Next, let's talk about the physical exam. Once again, keep this pertinent here and use a little common sense while conveying that you did a complete head-to-toe exam. Let's use abdominal pain as an example. If you say that the HENT is normal, heart and lungs are normal, back has no CVA tenderness, then that tells me you've done a full exam without launching into detail on exam findings that don't matter to the patient's chief complaint. Now, some people want you to detail every part of the exam to make sure that you are doing a complete exam, so just see how the person receiving your presentation reacts here. The mistake would be to just launch into your exam by saying that the abdomen is soft and non-tender right off the bat without having at least acknowledged that you performed an exam above the abdomen. Make sure to mention the pertinent negatives, such as the patient with abdominal pain has no rebound, guarding, or peritoneal signs. One thing to mention here is to be honest. If the person you are giving the presentation to asks you, did you do X, Y, and Z exam, and you didn't, just admit that you didn't. I know that the temptation may be to lie here when you think that the exam finding will be negative, but don't do it. It's not safe for your patients or for yourself. We all forget to do certain things sometimes, and that's okay. What's not okay is to lie about it. This way, next time you'll remember to do that part of the exam or get that part of the history. If you have to consult the chart during your presentation, then do it. We know that the patients can blend together, especially in the ED, so it's better to consult the chart or your own notes rather than guess at something. Finally, we get to the meat and potatoes of the presentation, the assessment and plan. Whenever I supervise medical students and interns, before they go into the room, I always ask them to come up with three life-threatening diagnoses that could account for the patient's symptoms. This will seem ridiculous in some patients, but it will be vitally important in others. For example, if you have a 50-year-old male with chest pain, then you'll want to say that your differential includes MI, PE, and aortic dissection at a minimum. This is not saying that you think that the patient has any of these conditions. You're just saying that these are possibilities and should be addressed in some way, whether it's through a thorough H&P or further testing. So let's go back to that patient that has the stubbed toe. So it's going to be really difficult to come up with three life-threatening diagnoses for this minor complaint, but you should at least mention that fracture is a possibility, even if we won't do anything about it. However, in these minor patients, be prepared for the what-if scenarios. For that same stubbed toe, I may test someone by saying, let's say that this patient was a diabetic and this stubbed toe caused an ulcer. What would you be concerned for? In that case, knowing that diabetics are prone to foot ulcers and infections, you may say that you'd be concerned for osteomyelitis, an infected ulcer, or vascular insufficiency to the toe. It's a way I try to make these patients with an obvious diagnosis more interesting. So just be on the lookout and try to think ahead as much as you can. So let's get back to the differential. Once you list your differential of at least three life threats, follow that with other non-life-threatening diagnoses, and then immediately follow it by what you think the patient has and justify it. For example, let's say that you have a patient with abdominal pain, but their chief complaint is vomiting and diarrhea. Everyone else at home is sick with the same thing, and their abdominal exam is soft and non-tender. This isn't a trick. This is classic gastroenteritis. However, you don't want that to be the only thing that you have on your differential, because then someone will think that you haven't addressed the life threats. You could say, the top three life threats would be appendicitis, cholecystitis, and bowel obstruction. However, I think they have gastroenteritis, based on a non-concerning abdominal exam, the fact that they have both vomiting and diarrhea, and sick contacts at home with the same thing. This tells me that you've thought through the diagnosis, have thought of a possible life threats, have made a decision about what you think it is, and can back that decision up with history or exam findings. Sometimes you won't have a clue what's going on, and that's okay. We run up against these patients all the time. That's where the last part of the presentation comes in, the plan. In emergency medicine, we want a plan of action and a disposition. It's what drives our practice, and it helps keep the ED moving so that we're ready for the next sick patient. This is where you need to make the call of how you're going to work up the patient. Maybe this plan will involve discharge with over-the-counter medications, or maybe it'll involve a large workup with multiple consultants, but it doesn't always have to include further testing unless you need it to rule out life threats. When you're talking about your plan, address any EKGs, labs, and radiology studies you want to order, if any. Then talk about any medications, IV fluids, procedures, or consultants that you think the patient needs. For example, in a patient with a URI, all you may have to say is that you want to discharge them home with symptomatic control, with acetaminophen and ibuprofen, return precautions, and a follow-up with their primary care doctor. That's it. On the flip side, for the female patient with abdominal pain that you think may be appendicitis, you'll want to say that you want a UA, urine HCG, CBC, Chem-10, LFTs, lipase, a pelvic setup with GC and chlamydia, wet prep, and KOH, and a CT scan with contrast, and possibly a surgical consult. Now, this was just an example. Not every female with abdominal pain needs all those tests. If you want to hear more about diagnostic testing and abdominal pain, go back to the early episodes of EM Basic and listen to abdominal pain and female abdominal pain episodes. So finally, we get to what most consider to be the most important part of the presentation, the patient's disposition. In the book, The House of God, the fat man said that disposition comes first, and while that is meant to be somewhat of a joke, most seasoned doctors will tell you that this is true because it helps set things in motion. This is where you get to make the call. Does the patient go home or come into the hospital? And if they come into the hospital, where are they going to be admitted? Now, you may not have all the answers just yet and may not be able to say what the disposition is, and that's fine. You have three options. Discharge the patient home, get more testing, but if the patients are negative, then the patient goes home, and admit the patient to the hospital even if the tests are negative. If you think the patient can go home, say that. The other option is to say that you want these tests, but if they're negative, then the patient can go home. The final option is to say that the patient comes in no matter what the tests show. So let's go through each of these examples. First, a classic URI. They go home with symptomatic control, return precautions, and primary care follow-up. So next is the patient that needs more testing, but looks well and you think they can go home. You don't need to spell out what to do if the testing is positive. It's more important to say what you're going to do if it's negative. For example, I think this patient has a URI, but some of the history suggests that it could be a pneumonia. In this case, you could say, I'd like to get a chest x-ray and reevaluate them. If the chest x-ray is negative, then they can go home with symptomatic control, return precautions, and a primary care follow-up. So finally, let's talk about the patient who's coming in no matter what our testing shows. For example, in a 50-year-old male with what you think is low-risk chest pain, but you think they need to be admitted, as far as disposition, you'll say, even if our testing is all negative, I would admit to the chest pain unit for a low-risk chest pain rule-out. So you'll adjust this as necessary, especially if you think the patient is sick and may need the ICU or step-down care. So before we wrap this up, here are a few final pearls. Even if you follow this outline to a T, you have to be prepared to think on your feet and make this presentation fluid. Sometimes the person may ask you to stop and clarify something, or to ask you about an additional pertinent negative or positive. This doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't listening to you or that you're doing a bad job. They just need a second to mentally digest something or get an additional piece of information. Sometimes I'll have someone get through their entire presentation and I have to ask them to go back and repeat a big chunk of the HPI. It's not that I wasn't listening, I just need them to go back to the HPI so that I can put it all together in my head. Also, just realize that different people will want different things. Some people want you to spell out every detail of your exam to make sure it's complete, and some will want it short and sweet. When you're first starting out, you can always stay on the safe side and include too much information, and then tailor it as you get feedback from the person you're presenting to. Probably the places that we scale back on most are the social history, the family history, medications and allergies, and normal exam findings. So one last time, let's go through each part of the presentation rapid fire, then I'll go through a few sample presentations. First, start off with the chief complaint, the history of present illness with pertinent positives and negatives, a brief review of systems, focused past medical and past surgical history, focused pertinent medications and allergies, a very focused social history and family history if required, vital signs, report any abnormal vital signs here, a focused and pertinent physical exam, a differential diagnosis that includes three life-threatening things, followed by what you think it is, your plan, what you want to do, and the disposition, what's going to happen to the patient ultimately. Now let's go through a few sample presentations. For each one, I'll tell you the diagnosis and the disposition up front, so you know what's important and what isn't. Don't focus so much on the patient management, focus on what I say and what I don't say. So this first case is a young, healthy 20-year-old with a chief complaint of sore throat whom you want to discharge. You think this is straight-up strep pharyngitis. So I have a 20-year-old male in bed 2 with a chief complaint of sore throat. It started 2 days ago and is associated with a fever to 102 and pain with swallowing. The patient denies any cough, difficulty breathing, drooling, changes in speech, stiff neck, nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, or rash. He has taken Tylenol with some relief of his pain. He's otherwise healthy with no past medical history, no surgeries, no meds besides the Tylenol, and no medication allergies. His vital signs are significant for a fever to 102 and mild tachycardia at 105. On exam, he is well appearing and non-toxic. He has exudates on both of his tonsils and tender cervical lymphadenopathy. The rest of his HENT exam is normal. His tonsils are symmetric with no signs of paratonsil or abscess. He has full range of motion of his neck, no meningismus, no drooling, or changes in speech. The rest of his exam is normal. My differential of serious problems includes paratonsil or abscess, deep-space neck infection, and sepsis. However, I think he has presumed strep pharyngitis, given that his tonsils are symmetric, he has no evidence of intraoral swelling, and he looks well. I will give him penicillin G, or bicillin, 1.2 million units IM, dexamethasone, 10 mg PO, and symptomatic control with acetaminophen and ibuprofen. I would discharge him with return precautions and follow up with his primary care doctor. Now that may seem really long and drawn out, but it hits all the important points for a beginner very thoroughly. If you would present that to me, it would tell me that you took a good history, did a good exam, and thought through the management. Once you get to the level of a senior resident, and you have an attending that trusts you, you could probably make the same patient presentation into a haiku and get the same effect. Don't try this at home, but how's this for a haiku? 20-year-old male, exudates, no cough, looks well, PCN, meds, home. Not too bad, right? Next, let's talk about a young female with abdominal pain who has classic appendicitis. So this one's going to need a decent workup. So I have a 22-year-old female in room 1 with a chief complaint of right lower quadrant abdominal pain. It started 8 hours ago in her periumbilical area and moved to the right lower quadrant about 30 minutes ago. She describes the pain as dull, initially, now sharper, rates it as an 8 out of 10 with no radiation of the pain. The pain is worse with walking and movement. She also has vomiting times 2 and anorexia since the pain started. She denies fever, back pain, urinary symptoms, vaginal bleeding, or discharge. She is otherwise healthy with no medical problems, had her tonsils out at age 5 but no abdominal surgeries, and her only medications are OCPs. She is currently sexually active and monogamous with her boyfriend over the past 6 months. vitals only significant for a heart rate of 105 when she is having pain. As far as her exam, HENT and chest are normal with no CVA tenderness. On her abdominal exam, she has point tenderness in the right lower quadrant with rebound and increased pain on heel tap. She has no other abdominal tenderness. I think she has appendicitis, but other things that on the differential are ovarian torsion, PID, TOA, and ectopic pregnancy since we don't have an HCG yet. For her workup, I would get a UA and urine HCG, abdominal labs to include a CBC, Chem-10, LFTs, and lipase. She also needs a pelvic exam with GC chlamydia swabs, wet prep, and KOH. As far as imaging, I would like to get a CT of the abdomen and pelvis with IV contrast. I would also like to give her a liter of normal saline, morphine 6 mg IV, and Zofran 4 mg IV. If her CT, labs, and pelvic are all negative, and she still has pain, I would pursue a surgical consult for admission for CO exams, given how classic her presentation is. Once again, focus on the parts of the presentation instead of the actual patient management. I'm sure there's some grumbling out there about the utility of the CBC or IV contrast in an ABI workup, so this is just going the conservative route. Finally, let's do one more patient. This is a middle-aged male with chest pain with a negative ED workup who is coming in for a chest pain rule-out no matter what. So I have a 50-year-old male in bed 2 with a chief complaint of chest pain. The pain started at rest 3 hours ago while he was watching TV. He describes it as a pressure-like sensation in his chest with no radiation. The pain came on gradually over 30 minutes, and it peaked at an 8 out of 10 intensity. Nothing made it better or worse, and the pain went away on his way to the ED. He denies shortness of breath, diaphoresis, nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, or recent illnesses. He has no DVT or PE risk factors. As far as his medical history, he has hypertension treated with lisinopril. Only surgeries are a remote appy and a knee surgery. Father had an MI at 60 years old. He doesn't smoke. He drinks occasionally and denies illicit drug use, and he specifically denies cocaine use. His vitals are remarkable only for a BP of 150 over 90. On exam, his lungs are clear and his heart has no murmurs, rubs, or gallops. I can't reproduce his chest pain without palpation, but he currently has no chest pain. He has no peripheral edema, and the rest of his exam is normal. My differential includes MI or ACS, PE, and aortic dissection. I don't think he has a PE or aortic dissection, given no PE risk factors. He happens to be PERC negative, and his history isn't consistent with dissection. He got an EKG and triage that shows normal sinus rhythm at a rate of 80 with normal axis intervals, no ST and T wave changes. For further workup, I would like to get a portable chest X-ray, a cardiac lab set with CBC, Chem-10, Coags, troponin, and CK/CKMB. I would also give him 325 mg of aspirin PO. If his labs and chest X-ray are negative and he continues to be pain-free, I would admit him for a low-risk rule-out. So that's all I have for now. Check out the website for the show notes. I'll condense down the outline of the presentation down to about a half a page, so it's super portable and you can carry it around on shift. In addition, I'll even make a much smaller version, about a card size that you can adjust in Microsoft Word as you see fit, and you could even make it down so you could carry it in your wallet or in your pocket. As always, check out the EM Basic website, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and if you like what you're hearing, give us a rating on iTunes and tell your colleagues to listen. I will be at the Core EM Academic Assembly in Atlanta next week presenting a poster on EM Basic, so if you're going to the conference, please stop by and say hi. Unfortunately, I won't be going to SAEM this year, but hopefully I will be at ASEP Scientific Assembly. Until next time, this is Steve Carroll for the EM Basic Podcast, signing off.